we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. If you haven't left a review, it would mean so much to me if you could do that today. All you have to do is hit the 5-star, and you don't even have to write anything, but it would mean the world if you did. It'll only take you a second, and it makes all the difference in how impactful a show can be, because iTunes takes notice of when a show has great reviews and they feature it. It's also a great way to book incredible guests on the show, because they will go and look at how many reviews there are and the quality of the reviews when they decide if they're going to go on a show. So it would mean so much to me if you would support the show in that way. Again, it'll only take you about 30 seconds and it will light up my entire day. All right. So today's guest developed his work through studying ancestral indigenous wisdom, Gottman's clinical couples therapy, and Eastern mysticism. It is a gentle yet straightforward path to supporting inner transformation through an integral system that honors your roots, your heart, and your spirit. He went from overdoses, sex addiction, and lack of direction to being an integral, married, and life-oriented man. He's here to help you move from a life void of meaning and virtue towards one of purpose and mastery. Please help me welcome Nicholas Cannon to Untamed and Unashamed. Hi.
Hi, Jade.
So something that really drew me to your work and to who you are is that you kind of make, I follow you on Facebook and on Instagram, and you kind of make social media kind of like an online journal in a way. It's really beautiful and inspirational the way that you share how you show up for your wife and how you navigate conflict, and just the nitty gritty too, like all of it. And so what's different with this interview is that, you know, a lot of times I have like very specific questions with people, but with you, I really just want to get into these beautiful moments that you've shared and these, I guess the transformations too, because you share some of, you know, your past as well as who you are now and kind of how that came to be. So maybe we can start there with how, it'd be beautiful for the listeners to hear your story about what brought you to the man you are today, who is able to write the way that you do about commitment and integrity. Something that I think will get a good laugh is, I know you used to say, why make one woman miserable when I can make a bunch of women happy? And yes. You didn't want to, you know, that you had all these trying to make sure a partner was perfect as a way to avoid commitment, things like that. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, your shares are so inspirational because you are like fully all in, committed to serving your queen and feeling like a king to her. So maybe I can be more specific with that part of your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So long story short, I was born and raised in Colombia, grew up super shy, being the nerd of my school, very isolated, socially awkward. That led to my teenage years, my early 20s. Trying to be the opposite of who I was. So I became the frat guy, the party guy, the player, but in an unconscious kind of way. Mm. In a very like fueled by insecurity and the desire to be liked by women, to be seen as attractive, to be validated, which I felt in my early years. I had very little or none of that, right? And then that journey led me into working for many years for a coaching company as a dating coach for men specifically, like dating and relationship coach. So back then my whole life and a big part of my identity was centered around, like, I'm a man who loves women. I felt also I am loved by women, and like, this is my life. And the more dates that I go on, the more women that I date, the more open relationships that I have, and the better of a coach I am, the more fun my life is. And that's it. So on one hand, I had that, like there was a lot of traveling, and so easy when traveling to just, okay, you fall in love very quickly because there's no responsibilities, no expectations. You know, there's a deadline, which makes it safe because you can go all in and then say bye-bye, right? And I used to say, like, through those years that, wow, like I cannot imagine this being any different, especially because every time that I got a little bit serious or there were deeper emotions with a woman, the first thing that would happen is suddenly she wants a relationship. And that scared me. I didn't think I was afraid. I thought I was just, oh, she's too needy. Like, what do you mean you want a relationship? And sometimes when I would go into it, I would see how it would bring up so much control, so much jealousy, so much insecurity. How when we get into a relationship very often, now the other becomes our property. Mm-hmm. Now I get to say what you wear, what you don't wear, what you do and you don't do, with whom you do it and not, how you live your life. When we're dating, I look at you and I celebrate everything, and what I don't like, I just let it slide and I think, okay, here's a person that she's not mine. Like it would be very creepy or weird to show up to a first date and start telling the other how to live their life. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that because we love the other person and they're a new person and we want to bring our best self forward, right? And make it light and fun or whatever. And back then I realized that very often the opposite happens when in relationship. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, like now that you are mine, now that I see you as mine, instead of my love growing, my possessiveness grows. And mm-hmm. I felt this a lot in my relationships back then, to the point that I was certain that a committed relationship cannot work. Like, the institution itself is flawed, especially marriage. So I thought, you know what? Every relationship I have goes sideways, and I was certain that it was because of relationships. I didn't think it had anything to do with me. Mm-hmm. First, I thought it's women's problem. They're too needy, too emotional. So then I realized, well, maybe not. And I thought, well, it's just the agreement doesn't work. And then I realized, you know, like maturing is realizing, well, maybe it's about me. So I went from that, from saying, like, I'll never get married. In fact, my wife was surprised when I proposed to her because she knew me as someone who will never get married. Like, for her, it was clear when we were dating. She felt like, okay, maybe I'll be with him for a long time. Maybe we may even have kids, but Nico's never going to get married. So when I got on my knees with the ring, she was like, there were so many emotions because she couldn't understand. Mm. And that transition for me was a process of becoming mature. And mature in relationships, I see it as understanding that, like, I always thought that if I find the right partner, then it's going to be great. Like, I find the perfect woman. If she's like, and as I wrote before, I'll find a woman that was very spiritual, but she's not sexy and wild enough. So it's like, okay, not good enough. Then I'll meet another one that was spiritual and wild and sexy, but she's a bit irresponsible with money. So maybe not the right one. Then I'll meet the one that is spiritual, wild, responsible. She lives far away. Okay. Someone that lives in my city. And it will seem like everything I will find, but there will always be something. Sometimes, and something that made sense. Like, oh, this is not, it's below my standards. So there was always more greener grasses. And I came to realize when I met my wife that when I first met her, I was really into her. And then as time went by, I started scanning for what was wrong. And this happens to a lot of people. I know for sure to a lot of men, especially those who have dated a lot. Like today, just the amount of option and choice that men and women have, assuming you're somewhat of a normal person and whatnot, just makes it so that we're constantly second guessing. Mm-hmm. I like this person, that maybe I can do better. Maybe she could be better. Maybe there's something better out there for me. And it just creates a lot of misery. It's like life hands you a cup of a sweet drink that you really love. And as you're drinking it, you're looking elsewhere and wondering if what some other people have maybe sweeter than yours. And you miss the whole experience. Mm-hmm. So the pain of that, of being in a relationship and being not certain, not sure, confused, led to realize that, okay, it's not that once she becomes the perfect person, the perfect woman, I will commit to her and then we're going to have this great relationship. I've tried that my whole life and it hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. Maybe because I commit to her and I decide it's going to be a great relationship, that's going to bring up the best parts of my woman. And yeah. I found that to be true so far.
Yeah, I remember you shared that you asked yourself, if nothing ever changed in her, would I be okay with that? Would I be capable of loving her? And that the moment you started loving her and appreciating all the beauty she brought to your life was the moment that beauty really amplified. So mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Because I do believe what you said to be true, that we are often with someone and trying to change them instead of really appreciating the beauty that is them. And it's very rare that someone can answer that question. If they never change in 25 years, if they're still this person, would I still want to be with them? It's very rare that someone can say yes to that, because it's very mm-hmm. often that we are trying to change our partners. You told a story on Facebook about how your wife came up and said that she was sorry for being insecure. I think that's a very common struggle with women as we get insecure. Can you share about how you responded to her and how it affected her? And also, I'm curious, what was it that came alive in you that brought you to creating that moment for her in the first place?
So for those of you watching that you know the story, which is probably most people, we had a difficult conversation with my wife. Some things work related, and some of the friction, like at the core of it, there was insecurity from her side around certain roles that we had taken and how that was going to evolve over time. And we had a conversation that was difficult. It was not a fight, but it was full of a lot of like tension and emotion. And we wrapped up, we looked at each other, okay, this makes sense. And that's it. And then she stayed in the living room and I came back here to my office. And then, let's say half an hour later, she comes into the office and she's very expressive. And like, I look at her and right away she makes a bit of a face like pouting, like in a very sweet way. And then she comes and hugs me and says, "I'm sorry, love. I was feeling very insecure, right?" And when she's standing, like it's kind of like my head faces her chest area. So she stood next to me here, and as I'm holding her, the first thing that I wanted to say is like, "Okay, like no problem," or "All right, like all good." Kind of like I receive your apology, and it makes sense. And I will share what inspired a different reaction right after I share what I did. But I had this glimpse of awareness, of presence, of noticing who she was being and who I was being. And beyond that, who I wanted to be. The moment I saw that she's struggling with her demons, her comparison, her fears, her unworthiness. Who I was being, as I wanted to say, it's okay, no big deal. It's like someone who's a bit righteous, who is also kind of easygoing, but no big deal. Who I am on a normal day. But I saw that gesture of her as an opportunity and as an opening. Like I get to be loving. I get to love her through something that she probably does not love herself very much, which for all of us, for women, insecurity is, it's so hard. It's like this icky thing we want to get rid of. We don't want to come close to it or look into its eyes. So right away, I picked her up and I lifted her and I started walking towards the living room where we have this tall mirror on top of a little shelf. I dropped her there and I turned her around and then I'm holding her, kind of grabbing her from her belly area with my head right next to hers. And I ask her, what do you see? And she's just confused, like, what's going on? And I came to apologize and what do you see? She's like, what do you mean? I said, what do you see? Look into your eyes. What do you see? And I saw she started to get a little bit nervous. Asked her, who are you? And I was not like my presence was very sharp. I was there anyway with her. Because I saw that she's carrying this insecurity. She has forgotten who she is beyond her upbringing, beyond her stories, beyond the nonsense of whatever we may go through as humans. Like to forget really like who I am beyond these moments when I forget who I truly am. So I'm looking at her and she starts joking. She says, oh, I am someone who needs to go to, what was it? Do some waxing, right? So like, kind of to dissuade the tension. So, no, who are you? Oh, someone who needs to clean the mirror because there was a lot of dust on the mirror. She tried to do like two or three more jokes, kind of to get away from that because it was so uncomfortable. And I realized it's hard for her to like look into her own eyes and get beyond just cracking a joke. So I told her, I said, I'm going to tell you what I see. I'm going to tell you who you are for me. And I said, exact words I don't remember, but I said something along the lines of, you are the most beautiful woman I have met. You are graceful, sweet, compassionate, with the biggest heart I have known in a woman. So gentle, so sweet, so open and committed. You're a woman whose power lies not in her strength, but in her softness. You are love. You are grace. You are my wife and I love you. You are loved. And as I was saying these things, she like broke down and I teared up a little bit too. Because as we were looking at each other through the reflection of the mirror, as I'm holding her, she was reminded of who she is beyond her insecurities. I was also reminded of who I can be when I decide to be loving. Beyond my righteousness, beyond just, okay, whatever, I'm busy with work. Like, okay, yeah, no problem, love. Like, beyond that. Beyond this very human way of being, which is like, all right, like nothing matters too much. It was a gift for the two of us. I got to be very present. And in giving her that, I was also, I reminded myself of who she is for me. I got to see her not as this insecure woman who 1 hour ago was stressed about something so silly about work. Because that's how I was holding her in my mind before. Like, what? You're complaining about this? This is bothering you? Really? Going from that judgment towards, hey, all right. That happened. And this is who you are. And this is who I am for you. I am a loving husband. So what sparked this, I don't know if you're familiar, there was a book that I read recently. And it's a book about being. But oddly enough, the book is titled The Ultimate Coach. And it sounds like it's about coaching. It's about a man named Steve Hardison, written by his wife, Amy Hardison. And I had heard of this book for a while, but I thought, I don't care to learn about coaching. I know what I know, and I feel that's worked for me so far. Whatever. And a few weeks ago, I felt pulled to that book. I was going through some stuff personally, and I thought, I don't know, I keep seeing this. I'm going to give it a read. And in the book, the invitation through the stories is to ask yourself this question, who am I being? Like, really, who am I being? Who am I choosing to be? And do I have any good reason not to be loving? And loving is not being nice. I think it's important to make a distinction because so many couples who are in such toxicity under the pretense of, I'm just being loving with him. He just has a drinking problem. It's like, no, you're being permissive. That's not love. You're condoning his behavior by a lack of boundaries. That is not love. That is the opposite of it. So being loving, it's this abstract, but also very known state that we can enter where who we are is of service to one another. And it can, and it can be very gentle and it can be very fierce, right? So in the book, the invitation was just to live from a place where we ask ourselves this question. At the root of everything, at the root of what I do, at the root of the conversation that I have, at the root of how I run my business, how much money I make, how my health is who I am being. Because that dictates, I'm being a lazy guy, I'm going to act like a lazy guy. I'm being a man who's busy working, I'm going to act like a man who's busy working. Now, I am being loving. There's something very different that takes over us when we enter that space consciously. Very, very, very different and a much more beautiful way of living, because it's dancing between our humanity of how mundane and limited and closed off and disconnected we may be. Mm-hmm. And for glimpses of time during the day, remembering who we are, choosing that as well. Mm-hmm. And out of that place, what I've started seeing is so many small and big miracles happening when I show up in a way that is not my usual way, that is outside of who I know myself to be, especially with my wife. What I get is something beyond what I'm used to getting. Mm. When I show up differently with my wife, the woman that is on the other side of the mirror is pure love. In many ways, we create our lover through our words, through how we see them. But on the other hand, if I leverage it, if I realize that almost everybody is reacting instantly to how they're being seen, I can create others in the way that I want to see them. I can create my wife as a powerful, strong, beautiful, graceful, confident woman. And the more that I look at her from that place, the more I relate to her as that, and her insecurity as her forgetting, not who she is, but what she did when she forgot who she was, the more I'm surprised when I see her and I think, what? Wow, this is my wife. You're different from that woman a few hours ago.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote, there are parts of my wife that have been mishandled by every previous man, starting with her father. I don't take blame for what they did, but I have decided to take responsibility. And it sounds like that example is what that responsibility looks like in action, which is really beautiful. And what you talked about as well after that, you talked about your greatest lessons through marriage. And one of them was about how your woman is your greatest mirror. And I always understood it differently until I read your post, actually. But you talked about how you used to actually resent how insecure she was when you started dating, but that it suddenly stopped when you were willing to look at how you kept certain doors open with past lovers or engaged in subtle, innocent flirtation, even when she didn't know about it. What was different for me when I read the way you articulated, because I always hear your partner's your greatest mirror. I've heard that for a decade now, but I've always understood it as we reflect back to them by accountability and speaking what we see. Through your articulation, though, of what it means and of your, like how you share, what I understood it was it goes past that. The way you shared about our partner being our mirror, it like really shifted, like, oh, it's, if I'm seeing my partner as someone to be, maybe parts of him that I'd like to change or that I'm not appreciating, he's going to feel that from me and he's going to show up more as that person. But if I'm seeing the parts of him that, I really adore and that I see as a king in him, like he's going to show up more as that person. And then like that grows even more. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. And it is, there's a nuance to it. Mm-hmm. And it's, all right. Okay, it makes sense. What I appreciates becomes bigger, expands, where I place my energy, my attention, I see more of. All right. But what do we do when there's toxicity? Do we just because let's say my office smells nice, there's some incense, and then I walk through the kitchen and it's caught fire and it smells like smoke and something's burning, I could say, well, I'm just going to focus on what I love about my house, and I'm just going to go on. My house smells like incense. This means that, like, that's a bad idea. That's going to end up in tragedy, right? So it is important for sure. And the way we see our partner definitely brings more of that, especially how we relate to them. And how we relate to them goes in the conversation. Like, through our words, we are affirming a certain identity of one another. Mm-hmm. Let's say if I see my wife as annoying and insecure and like a burden and this volatile woman who needs a lot of attention, and she comes and or something happens, we have a difficult conversation, how I'm going to react is going to be like, okay, I'm going to roll my eyes. And the words that I use are, talking with a woman that is like this. Now, very, very different if I see her, like, well, actually, this here's a woman who is in her power, in her heart, in her truth, sharing with me what she needs, what she wants. I can still receive the same words from a different place. Mm-hmm. Or receive her insecurity without forgetting who she truly is, right? I get to choose. Mm-hmm. Do I have an insecure wife? I could say yes, because she admitted to it and she came and apologized about it. So I could say, like, sure, no worry. I could treat her like okay, like, you're this little child. Like, mm-hmm. It's okay, baby, and go. And that's who she is. Mm-hmm. Or I can take that opportunity and remind her, okay, that happened. That's done. But this is who you are. Don't forget that. Mm-hmm. And I won't forget it either. And this is why I'm reminding you, because you cannot trick me. And this happened for me. There was a moment in an ayahuasca ceremony. I worked with some indigenous elder in Colombia. We host retreats once a year. And I was about to divorce my wife. It was a couple of years ago. And I was done. So I came, I drank the medicine, and I thought, you know what? Just show me. And I was certain it's going to tell me, that's it, you fulfill your soul's contract, whatever you came here to do together, and it's time to move on and live your life separately. And it was the opposite. Like, I started seeing her, and we were arguing so much, and it was dense and heavy and difficult and painful. And I saw beyond all of that, like, I saw, like, this flower, like, this soul, this beautiful essence that was inside of her. So beautiful. I was in tears from how beautiful it was. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at her, because she was across the fire sitting on the other side. And I saw the, you know, just the woman, the girl that is sitting there. And my first thought is, ooh, you cannot trick me anymore. You may forget at times who you are, but I know who you truly are beyond all of that nonsense. And I look at her like that. Sometimes when she's complaining, I look into her eyes, and if I remember, because I can buy... And I sometimes do. I buy into her complaints, and then they're off we go together. But if I have enough awareness within me and I look at her, just a look, she's talking, and then I look at her and I remember, like this, oh, you cannot fool me. I know beyond the intensity of this emotion, I know who you are. I know what's your truth. And very often that's an invitation. That's the real mirror we want to be for our partners. We can dance to many different tunes. Mm-hmm. Why not dance the most beautiful one? It requires more presence, but it's far more beautiful. So yeah. that's the mirroring, and it's gonna require that I clean up my act first and foremost. Because sure, at the beginning of our relationship, she was being insecure, mm-hmm. and she had good reason. She didn't know about it, but I knew that she had good reasons. So. Mm-hmm. Unconsciously, mm-hmm. if I remember that there's one life that flows through all that exists, is one life. We just forget about it. We're disconnected. And I think I have my own body, my own house, my own home, my own car. Okay, this is me. This is Nicolas. This is Jade. Mm-hmm. But if I remember that somewhere there's a part of us that is not different and that knows you as myself, Maybe it's not conscious for me, and maybe it's in this last lifetime it's not going to come. Maybe it is. But if I acknowledge that, then there's a part of you that already knows everything that's going on within me. Mm-hmm. And reacts to that and responds to that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. Like you can just feel when something's not right or not in integrity. And it makes me think of like this example of the mirror. Is like, you know, both ways of, like you said, she may be mirroring to you. You've talked about, you know, navigating conflict consciously, like that, you know, the more responsibility we take, the better the relationship gets. And so asking, is there a chance that her complaint speaks to something I'm not willing to see? Like that example, right, of the insecurity, maybe leaky sexual energy or whatever it is. So there's like that mirror where, you know, she's mirroring something to you, you're going within and you're taking responsibility. And then, you know, the mirroring back to her, the way I had always understood it when it comes to accountability is like that example that you give with, you know, reminding her of agreements in your conflict. Like I can see that the agreements we have are not being honored. And that you're frustrated and, you know, I don't know what to do right now. So I'm going to step back. I'm not leaving you. Let me know when you can still honor our agreements and our commitments as we navigate this conflict. So that's like, that's the mirror that I've always understood of like you're mirroring back to them when they're out of alignment. So I love, you know, seeing now that it's both, that it's a deeper understanding for me. So thank you. I'm so excited to tell you guys about Paleo Valley's grass-fed bone broth. Bone broth has been hailed as a healing superfood for centuries, and what makes bone broth so amazing is its collagen content. After the age of 20, we begin producing less collagen every year, and as our production declines, our natural collagen and elastic fibers get looser, meaning fine lines and wrinkles, dry skin, deterioration of healthy joints, brittle hair and nails, and much more. But consuming supplemental collagen, such as in bone broth, can actually stimulate the body to make more of its own collagen. I choose Paleo Valley's bone broth because unlike most bone broths, theirs is not processed with high heat. It's not extracted with harmful chemicals. It's 100% grass-fed and finished from cows never given antibiotics, steroids, or hormones. And something that really sets them apart is that this product is made from bones, not hides. Most companies use the hides because it's cheaper. But when collagen is sourced from the animal's skin, we miss out on all of the extra nutrients and restorative benefits of the bones. The benefits are endless, but a few are that it eases arthritis symptoms and supports joint health, improves skin health and reduces the appearance of wrinkles, it increases hair growth, aids in blood sugar regulation, helps prevent heart disease, supports gut health, helps build muscle mass and boost metabolism, reduces the appearance of cellulite, and promotes better sleep. I had been searching for a long time for the most convenient and cost-effective bone broth without sacrificing quality because I knew I wanted it as a staple in my family's daily routine. Paleo Valley's bone broth not only makes it easy to serve to my children, but the flavor also makes it exciting for them. Protein in our diet makes all the difference in our moods in this home. And with my daughter being very picky when it comes to protein, this makes it so easy for me to make sure that she's getting enough of that each day. They have the unflavored, which mixes easily in anything, but I am obsessed with their vanilla and chocolate flavors, and so are my kids. I feel so great providing this for my family each morning as we start our day. Head over to paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. That's Paleo Valley, paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. You know, you've said that a conscious relationship takes a lot of work, yet it should not feel like work. Can you explain what that means?
For me, a good parallel has been learning to play guitar the last few years. Especially at the beginning, for anyone who has picked up any new instrument or new language or anything new, dancing at the beginning, it's tense. You're getting it wrong over and over and over with the guitar. You practice, you get calluses that hurt. You practice too much, maybe even blisters. Your fingers hurt, your tendons, your muscles are not used to the amount of, like, to the postures and the amount of pressure that you need to use so that it doesn't sound ugly. So usually the first month or 2 months of playing guitar for almost everybody is realizing that you cannot control your hand very well, that it hurts after 10 minutes of playing, and that it sounds horrible. Like, it's just painful. It's just a little excruciating. Now, as I keep doing this, eventually maybe I get 2 chords fine, and I start creating a little bit of music. And a little bit of music is enough to get a person hooked for the rest of their life. Ooh, something worked, something beautiful happened, and I created it. I can keep going, even though it hurts. Then the point comes when a professional guitar player, when he goes to perform, he's professional and people go and pay because he makes it look effortless. He's just sliding through the guitar. He's making love to the guitar and sharing that with the public. And he makes it look like anybody could do it. So simple. And he's so relaxed and he closes his eyes and he's moving. And people wonder, how with your eyes closed? And how do you play so perfect? Well, that because he spent a lot of time doing the little drill, doing the little thing. So I see relationships very similar, especially at the beginning. Most of us grow up very immature in our relationships because we don't have good role models. For most of us, our parents, for most people, they got divorced. For some others, they stuck around because of need or convenience or they had to. I honestly do not know many people that say, you know, when my parents love each other and I grew up in a loving home and it was beautiful. No, it's very rare. So we don't have role models of that. Which means that we have to start from scratch to a degree or from minus, because what we learned about love is really not what love is about. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting with a lot of ideas, the way my dad treated me, the way that my mom treated me, the way they treated each other. So it takes work. It takes work and patience and a lot of compassion with ourselves and courage to go through those stories and let them go. In many ways, is cutting the umbilical cords that we keep with our mother or father, like breaking whatever has happened until me, and deciding to create something different. It takes developing a new way of being. On the other hand, if I do that work, having a relationship doesn't feel like work. Suddenly, if I've taken care of that, if I constantly remind myself and I've done the work to remind myself as a loving husband, to create myself as a loving man, to create my wife in my eyes as a beautiful, graceful woman, worthy of my love and me worthy of hers. If I've done that, for every person, it looks different. For me, I have my yoga practice, my meditation, different things. For some other people, it's their work. For some people, it's music, it's dancing. We all have our own way in which we practice who we are. Then I get to bring the fruits of that to my relationship. And then even when it's difficult, it doesn't feel like work. It's like, ooh, here's an interesting challenge. I'm playing guitar and then I hit the wrong note. It's like, all right, just because I have practiced, I know I can create a beautiful melody. Just maybe today and it's going to take a little bit longer. So that's what I mean. It takes a lot of individual work. Mm-hmm. And together, for sure, there's many things that we need to learn how to have a conversation together. We need to learn how we can have this conversation in a way that we don't want to kill each other, in a way that both of us feel seen, in a way that we never compromise, but we learn to commit. Meaning, I don't settle for less than I want. You don't settle for less than you want, but we figure out something greater that fits yours and my world. Mm-hmm. So there's still things that we need to do as a couple. But if we cannot arrive to a loving, caring, kind, and compassionate way of doing that, the relationship is not going to last, because it's a space where we need to negotiate the rest of our life. Who I am today and who my wife is today, all right, we spoke about whatever and we have our agreements and we know how things work. But tomorrow she's a different woman. Tomorrow I'm a different man. In 5 years. And there's different things that will shift for the two of us. So we will come back. And there's many things that we pay attention to. And maybe we have kids. And maybe we move to another place. And something happens with work and with health. and so many things that before we didn't speak about, we knew we'd never had to deal with, become online. And if I don't have a space where I feel at the very least safe and comfortable bringing up whatever it is that I need to bring up, it's going to be torture, because it's like having a business partner and you cannot speak with them without going into anxiety. It feels like work every time you have to come and tell them something about the business. It's going to be excruciating. It's not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. But if there is that safety, if a trust, if we've done enough work so that we can be a safe space for each other, then between us, it doesn't have to feel like too much work. Sure, it may bring a lot of our emotions up, but we don't have to feel like I'm frustrated. I don't get it. This isn't going anywhere. We're constantly at a gridlock or hitting a wall. But when it feels like that, there's connection is not happening. So that's what I mean. That it doesn't have to be like that. Even if there's a lot of difficult conversations, it can be had from a very different place.
Yeah, I think that's really what it is. That because a lot of times when you're in the conflict, you're like, this feels like really hard work. It does feel like work, but when I think what differentiates it from really feeling like work, and then it's work, but it doesn't always feel like work, is that safety, like you said. Because if you have the safety there, then it's like no matter what, you know it's going to be okay. No matter what, you know you're going to end up playing that beautiful song on the guitar, and so it's worth it. But if you don't have that safety there, then you don't know that it's worth it. You don't know that you're ever going to learn that beautiful song. So it's the safety. I guess that comes with the commitment on both parties of we're going to figure this out. And so I have two more topics I wanted to discuss with you, if it's okay. Mm-hmm. The second to last one is you talked about the difference in other countries versus America when it comes to, I guess, where women are more cared for by the masculine, right? And mm-hmm. And how the women in other countries tend to soften up and be a bit more in their feminine essence because of that. And the men also seem happier. You also bring up, you know, we talk about like we own our car, our lawn, and you know, you talk about that, like with how we take care of what's ours, you know, and yeah. So I'll let you go where you want with that. But one thing that really I was like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. I want everyone to hear this was you talk about how we care for Mother Nature, not because she's fragile, but because we desire to nourish and maintain her beauty. And that if we cared for women more, that beauty would have an easier time flourishing in relationships. And that's something I guess that you've seen in other countries and not so much in America. And I'm in Texas, so I can confirm. But yeah, I'd love to just, you can expand on that however you'd like.
Yeah. I remember that post. I think that got a lot of hate from so many trolls online, and
probably from people in America.
Yeah, just the phrase of like ownership. I think I said women love to be owned, and some people cannot get past the semantics as the metaphor, the words that I alluded to, which is owned not as in possessed as an object, but as in cared for. In the way that we care for what we consider ours, right? I want to care for my house and my kids and my lawn and everything. And for many men, my car and my business. And a lot of men pay more attention to their car than they do to their wives. Mm-hmm. To their business, they have everything organized, systems, processes. Mm-hmm. Like they're master multitaskers, delegators. When it comes to their home life, to their wife, they go schedule a date. They become children that don't know how to do anything. Mm-hmm. Why? Big part of that is there's not a sense of ownership. Like, this is my woman. Not in the sense that I control her and she's an object that I do whatever with. No, but she's in my care. She was given to me by life. Like, the source of life created her, and whatever that source is, thought she was good for me, and now I get to take care of her. Like, what a gift.
Yeah.
So... yeah, so many people couldn't understand, and they just got caught up in the, oh, this is misogynistic. No, there's no misogyny in caring deeply about someone more than as mine, as an extension of me. That is the deepest ownership. Like if I truly own, let's say if I own my problems, found my fears, found something, means I've made it a part of me. I embrace it as deeply as I can. If I own my wife, it means like her and I are not two. We're not different. So in other countries, it's very, very different. South America, in some European countries, in many Slavic countries. Just, if you go on a date with a woman, not even a date, in Colombia, back in the day, and I was a kid, I was 15, 16 years old. If I went out with one of my girlfriends, like female friends, not a woman I was dating, she could have been one of my buddy's girlfriend, and I just happened to go for ice cream with her. It's implied, I am paying. And if I'm not, there's this big shock, like, what's going on? And of course, there's a certain shadow to that culturally where there can be entitlement and expectation. And there's women that there's just this, like, I am beautiful. Yeah, I am beautiful. I did my makeup. I have contributed enough to the relationship. Now I just cross my arms and you have to do the rest. And that's toxic. There's a lot of that in Russia as well. But if we rescue the positive aspect of that, what I have seen, and I've traveled a lot. I spent most of the last 10 years traveling through Europe and North and South America. And what I saw was that in the countries where men take better care of women, where they take pride in caring for women, not as a burden or an obligation, but as something they get to do, as a privilege. Like, wow. Like, I mean, I'm not attempting to compare women with objects, but I think for some people it's easier to get the idea. If you buy yourself, for men, a Ferrari, or for a woman, they buy themselves like a very fancy purse. It's like suddenly, because you love it so much, because it's so important to you, it's like you make sure that you keep it in a very, like, you do everything you can do for that to be in its best condition. When we really care about somebody else, which for most people only happens when they start dating, their early dating phases. Like, oh, I'm infatuated. I'm in love. We haven't slept together. I wonder what it's going to be like. Everything's perfect. Suddenly, I take you on dates. I am creative. I make time for you no matter how busy I am. I put on my best outfit. I bring out my best self, the best conversations. Like everything. I'm understanding. I'm a good listener. What not? When we take each other for granted, that's when we, oh, all right, that's just somebody that cohabitates with me and they can collect dust and I don't care. They're their own person and I'm myself. In countries where there's more of that proactive care from men to women, where there is more of that desire to protect and to nourish from the masculine to the feminine, women are far more radiant. Far more radiant when they're well cared for by their men. And I have a grandma, which is probably the person I love the most that is currently alive. She's 85 years old. She was a single mother of my father and my aunt. And she grew up she was a farmer, a lot of poverty, a lot of violence. There was a civil war in Colombia. She grew up through a really difficult upbringing, violence, war, loss. My father's father abandoned her, and she's a very sweet lady, a very sweet woman. And she managed. She worked her whole life, and she managed. Now, for many years now, like my dad or also my sisters and I, we pitch in, we pay for everything so that grandma doesn't have to worry about anything. Mm-hmm. Not because she's incapable, because she has it. Like, she has the guts, the hustle, the grind. If nobody ever sent her a single penny, she could do it on her own. Mm-hmm. It's not that she's fragile. Like, she's far stronger than probably most of us. Most women that I know, I have some friends that I think they can out-masculine most guys when they have to, quote-unquote, wear the pants. They kick ass and they're way more committed and they're, like, directed and focused and powerful than most men I know. There's so many women like that I know that, like, there's nothing fragile, not in nature, not in a woman. Mm. But when a woman has to be forced to step into that kind of energy, when the feminine has to be forced to fend for herself, like in that kind of energy, in a society that celebrates masculine traits and values and perhaps rewards economically more masculine sacrifice and masculine efforts and whatnot. It's very hard for a feminine being to maintain her radiance, her beauty, her softness if she needs to harden to make it in a in the world. Mm-hmm. So we provide, like with my wife, I provide for her. I mean, she also makes her own money, and sometimes she makes more than I do. And, you know, she manifests from a very different place. But if I can, like she, I've told her, I said to her, I only want you to work if it's an expression of your joy, of your gifts, of your growth. As long as you're with me, you don't have to do that. Not because you're incapable. If I knew you were incapable, I would not be saying that. I would let you grow up into somebody who is capable, because otherwise I'm robbing you of your own growth, but not because you're incapable. But because I wanna protect that innocence, that softness. That doesn't come natural to me. For me, it's more natural, like the hyper-focused and grind and commitment and sales call after sales call and all that thing that this world rewards. Mm-hmm. I thrive in it. But I've seen her doing that, and I've seen the kind of woman she becomes, and there's certain tension and rigidity and when she imbibes a predominantly masculine energy. So yeah, it's not a lot of men think, well, so we have to pay for women because what? Because women are irresponsible and they cannot make their own money. And it's no, like look around. There's probably millions of women that make way more money than you. It's not about that. Women are extremely capable. The CFO, the chief financial officer of OpenAI, is a woman, much smarter than like one of the like fastest growing startups of probably one of the most complicated companies out there. And it has to deal with math, which can be a very masculine thing, just numbers. Like when they hired her, they had their pick from probably the best talent that included men. Like it's obvious in so many ways. Like it baffles me when men still think that the masculine is above the feminine or that the women are less capable. It's like, no, just us, if not more. They can bring life into this world. We can't. So that's a clear, they're winning. Beyond that, not because they can do something, it means that is the thing that's going to serve her or the relationship the most. So provision for me is a way of, it's like, if I plant a garden full of the most beautiful roses and flowers and orchids, like what kind of gardener am I if I went for the flowers and the roses to pitch in, have the soil, have the water? Like, why don't you do that? Why don't you water yourself? It's like, no, like as a gardener, I'll water you, I'll nourish you, I'll put a little fence, I'll remove the weeds if I need to. Because your radiance, your fragrance, when you're blooming, it's like, it's way more than I could ever ask for. That makes everything worth it. So a well-cared for woman that has nourished her feminine side and that is connected with it, like this is something that is very hard for a man to get on his own. Very, 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 very hard. So yeah, unfortunately, North American culture has made it so that it's like everyone is on their own and we treat each other as like we are equals, but we're not the same. We're very different biologically, anyways, energetically. And I think many movements were reaching towards equality, which is a great thing. But what we got was sameness, meaning the feminine have lost their femininity, the masculine have lost their masculinity, and then we're left with everybody suffering. Like, and I speak from experience. I have friends, my older sister, that are like CEOs or top salespeople in big companies, killing it financially and completely miserable. They're suffering because the men they meet are weak, and they're suffering because they were forced to kind of play a corporate game. Both of them, if tomorrow they had a family, they would throw it all away for their family. And I'm not saying this is every woman. There's women that, for them, they value their career way more, and that's okay. But generally speaking, it affects many women. One of the most common complaints or questions I received the last decade from women is like, where are the real men? Mm-hmm. The men I meet, they don't want to lead. They want to split the bill. And it's not about money. It's not, it's like for them, it's not about money. It's about like, hey, like, I'm a flower. There's a radiance. There's a beauty that I know is possible in me. Mm-hmm. But you seem like the kind of gardener that wants me to put on my part of the soil, my pitching for my water, pitching for my, it's like, you know, then what do I need you for? If I'm going to, one time my wife told me that, because I was, when we first met, I was still in some ways had been Canadianized because I was living for a while here. And yeah, at one point I was like, I don't know what happened. And I started kind of like, okay, this is you and this is mine. You pay for yourself, I pay for mine. And she calls me one day and she says, like, if I'm doing everything on my own, if I live all my life by myself, like, what's your role in my life? And I thought, well, you're independent. She's like, sure. But then what roles do we play in each other's life? And something that is hard to accept is that we enter a relationship because we need something from each other. We complement each other in a certain way. My wife's softness and radiance, and she grabs her little cup of tea in the mornings and sips it slowly and grabs a little bit of chocolate. And we go for a walk, she stops to smell the flowers and hug the trees. And if it wasn't for her, I'm getting from point A to point B, but because she is like that, then I slow down and I enjoy my life a lot more.
Yeah.
And the opposite. If it wasn't for me, she would just kind of flow so much into the moment that certain things will be harder to get done, to move forward, projects, long-term visions, planning. Mm-hmm. So when there's nourishment from both sides, the dance becomes beautiful. But if somebody is dragging each other, or somebody doesn't want to play, or if I'm dancing but we're expecting for both people to lead at the same time, it's just going to feel very, very, very tense and awkward.
Yeah. And the beauty that you're talking about that radiates from these women that are cared for, and even from the men who are enjoying that dynamic as well. You know, the last thing that I was going to bring up was a quote that your friend had told you, that was also a difference between America and other countries, is that he said, there's a difference between hot women and beautiful women. Hot women are everywhere. They abound. They are beautified, but not beautiful. Beautiful women, on the other hand, are rare and a real mystery. Hotness speaks to our impulses. Beauty speaks to our imagination. And, you know, you talked about how in Western countries, there's this fixation with being hot at the expense of beauty. And it's so true. In my 20s, with a background in modeling and, all of my image-based careers in my 20s and into my 30s, there was this fixation with being hot and appealing. And it does starve the beauty out of you because you're so focused on the outside and on these standards, you know, and instead of that radiance that really is the beauty that flows when you feel properly gardened, before a partner comes along, you know, just you gardening yourself and what's so nourishing, and those things that fixate on the hotness are most often the opposite of nourishing. So, so that was what I wanted to end with. Because it's, you know, you think of beauty and it's, you know, some women may hear that, no, I don't feel beautiful, but the beauty that we're talking about is that radiance from a woman that's loved well, or from a man that, experiencing that softness from a woman that is loved well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%. Thank you for sharing that. Most of my 20s, I dated what I thought were the hottest women that I could meet. Models, actresses, porn stars. And until I matured and I realized, you know what, it comes from a very empty place and it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, my wife is very different from the standard that I had about a hot, attractive woman. which back then was like fake boobs, huge ass, and like all these different things that media pushes to us. But like the beauty that radiance, it's is what melts a man's heart, I think.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with looks. Nothing is. And it's the only thing that can really, really inspire a man's devotion.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. Can you let people know all of this that I've shared, that I was inspired by you, where they can read it themselves, where they can find you, and where they can connect with you if they'd like to work with you?
Mm-hmm. So on Instagram, I am at Nico Cannon, and then _ Facebook, Nicholas Cannon. Now, that's a long story, but if you were watching this, I am currently, in the transition. I am retiring as a relationship coach. So in terms of relationships, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but I'm hosting the last relationship course, the last relationship program that I'm going to lead. So I've packed over a decade of my work and the best things that I have learned, the tools, everything into one small program, made it the most affordable thing that I have ever put out there for anyone who wants to learn to transition from bickering, from disconnection, from uncertainty. Oh, I don't know if she's for me. I don't know if I should be with him. That gray zone where things are ugly and icky and we're constantly fighting and cannot really grow out of our patterns in relationship towards a love that becomes an amazing reminder of what's possible, that raises our standards for who we are, but also for how we live. That reminds us that we can be loving, we can choose to be much, much, much greater than we are before. If people are interested, that's happening right now. And once it stands, it was going to be on my website, nicocannon.com. That's pretty much it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything that you share. I really, really appreciate, so much social media is like just the highlight reels. I appreciate that yours feels more like a behind the scenes. So thank you. Thank you for the gift of that. Yeah.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right, you guys. So I just want to share a couple of things, about that conscious navigating conflict consciously before we close here. Something that really stood out to me about like what he says about navigating conflict consciously, gotta like try saying that a couple times fast. It's not easy. Is that he shares an invitation to ask, how is this expression that I dislike from my partner a direct response to something that I am doing or being? I mentioned that he says like the more responsibility you take, the better your relationship gets. So like, we mentioned maybe his partner had insecurities, but once he closed up that leaky sexual energy, all of a sudden she didn't have these insecurities. He talks about how her outburst of emotions were linked to him not being validating or him being dismissive, right? So it's like really looking at, is there a chance that her complaint or his complaint speaks to something I'm not willing to see? Maybe something that is leaky in my life or not in integrity or an area that I'm not showing up in the way that he or she needs. And then I wanted to share, there is like an example of what he says when they're in conflict. And one of them is maybe not honoring the agreements of either not shouting or whatever it is that, maybe you need to go take deep breaths, whatever it is. Cause I really love the way he worded this. It's obviously not easy to do in the moment when you're worked up. So whoever is the less charged person would probably need to be the one to say this, but he gives two examples. I'll read them both. He said, love, I see you are frustrated and it makes sense. That's really important. It makes sense. There's so many emotions present and this is confusing. I also want to remind you about our commitment to not interrupt, not attack, not blame, and not ignore each other during these difficult conversations. Has the agreement changed for you? That's such a powerful way to let your partner know that they're not honoring your agreements in conflict. That can remind them, you're right, I am interrupting, I am blaming, I need to take a breath. The other example he gave was, I can see you are in a place where it must feel hard to honor the agreements we have set. This makes it very difficult for me to hear you and try to understand you. I'm starting to feel angry and frustrated. It feels like scary territory and I don't know what to do. I feel like pushing back or punishing you. And if this continues the way it's going, I do not trust myself to not go there. So I'm going to step away from this conversation. I want you to know that I'm not leaving you. That is super important because when you're speaking all this to someone who may have anxiety in the moment, it can feel very abandoning. So I want you to know that I'm not leaving you. It's really important here. I'm very interested in us repairing and finding a solution to the situation. That's like added security. I'm very interested in us repairing and finding a solution to this situation. So come to me once you feel ready to have a proper conversation where we can respect what we both committed to. That puts the other person like in a spot where they're like, okay, I need to be responsible here for both of us. I need to take responsibility. I need to clean up whatever it is that's causing me to not honor our commitments. It's so good. I think that's just, it's perfect. You know, you can obviously make it your own. And then lastly, I wanted to share some journal prompts. It's just a couple of them. You know, they don't have to be journal prompts. It can just be something you think about right now. So in what ways am I contributing to the deterioration or absence of a healthy, passionate, and loving relationship? Really important. Have I forgiven all of my previous partners? Have I made peace in my heart with both of my parents? What habits sabotage my mental, emotional, and physical health? What friendships pull me back in loops of mediocrity, avoidance, and isolation? What is one thing I could commit to doing for the next 4 weeks that would make me a much better partner or a more attractive prospect? Then the last two, do I have something to hide? Do I feel I have something to prove? So I thought those were really powerful. All right. And then I'm going to thank the affiliates. You can always go to my site, jade-bryce.com. to sign up for any coaching or my newsletter. And then all of my favorite products are at paleovalley.com/jade. That's paleovalley.com/jade. It's where I get my bone broth, my meat organs, my whey, my meat sticks, my meal bars. I have benefited so much since including their products in my daily routines, my muscles, my skin, my hair, all of it. And then all the pleasure wands and yoni eggs. I do teach clients how to use these consciously, but you a jade egg is very, very beneficial for the pelvic floor and for better sex, better orgasms, all of it. You can get any of those at wands, WAANDS.com, code jade for a discount there. And lastly, bio optimizers. Bio optimizers, I've been using their sleep products for 5 years. That is how committed I am to this brand, because their magnesium and their sleep breakthrough is incredible. Bio Optimizers magnesium pills. My sleep is completely different when I use those. Like, I wake up feeling like a new woman. So Bio Optimizers code Jade gets you 10 or 15% off, but you will be so happy with any of their products, but the magnesium, I swear by it, y'all. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in and being on this journey with me. It would mean so much if you would leave a review or share an episode with a friend. You can also join me on Instagram at Untamed and Unashamed Podcast. As always, be a light, stay open, and remember, you belong here.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.